It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. The new iPad's here, and we're going to take it apart. We're going to tear it down with iFixit. We'll also get to Tim Stevens' review and a Nexus 5 look from Miriam Joire. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 430, recorded November 3rd, 2013. Can you slice a tomato with it? This Week in Tech is brought to you by Go to Assist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. To get this special offer, visit Stamps.com now, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card necessary. And use the offer code TWIT to get two bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the great tech news of the week. And boy, there's a lot. Fortunately, we have the experts online with us, starting with, on my left, Miriam Joire, formerly of Engadget, now at Pebble. Congratulations.
Thank you, thank you.
Great. Are you an evangelist for Pebble?
Apparently I am. I don't know how that really happened, but it did. And it's kind of like now I can pretend to be like Guy Kawasaki, you know, famous
yeah.
or something.
Well, but what's cool about this is you still, and I can tell you never lost your enthusiasm for this stuff because you still get all the new stuff and review it and talk about it. You just
Well, you know, I think being a product person means understanding other products, right? So you need to kind of stay connected, understand what's good, what's not good, and kind of like, you know, continue forming those opinions. So I've requested from everyone to, you know, obviously it's a hobby now, but you know, to keep me in mind, and they've been very generous so far.
Good. Well, she's got something that I want, but we'll talk about that in a moment. You've got something I want. But before we do, let's say hi to Tim Stevens, former colleague over at Engadget. Now at CNET. Good to see you, Tim.
Yeah, good to see you. This is interesting. I've been on podcasts with Miriam before, but we've never co-guested before, I don't think. So this should be interesting.
No, this is the first time. It's true.
You actually know each other. That's marvelous.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. It's not just on TV.
Also with us from Paris, France, it's Patrick Beja, not Patrick. Good
hey
to
guys,
see you once again, doing? Patrick.
Good to see you too. I have also been on a show with Miriam, so it's kind of family reunion.
Oh, you know, it's this whole thing. It's very incestuous. We all know each other. We all work together, and that's part
you
of.
You guys
the
have no idea how incestuous it is.
No, don't get started. Don't start. No, but that's one of the joys about doing this, and one of the joys about new media and podcasting in general is it's such a non-competitive medium that everybody just kind of hangs out with everybody else and. It's mostly because there's no money in it. If there were money in it, then we'd be at each other's throats.
Probably. But, you know, that's really something I appreciate, and I'm sure the listeners as well, about the world of podcasting when I fell into it a few years ago. It was so different from the world of blogging where it seems everyone was out to get everyone else. That was something that really drew me into it. So I'm glad it continues to this day with maybe a little bit more money, hopefully, for some people. But
I bet blogging started out kind of that way too. In fact, I seem to remember it was very collegial in the early days, and you know, waxy links would hang out with you know, it was just all relaxed. But then, you know, it becomes more professional and more money's involved, and you get the big companies like Engadget and getting involved, and suddenly everybody's, you know, trying to top everybody else. I think that's just normal, and I'm sure it's going to happen with podcasting if it could ever become successful.
I'm still trying to get a Tim. Just kidding.
Hey, so you have a Nexus 5, Miriam. I'm so jealous.
That's a lie.
I saw it.
It's a lie.
Yeah, you're like that person taking a picture of the new Kit Kat bar coming into the Google campus. I don't know what that is.
There it is. An Nexus 5. Ooh. Yeah. It's a black one. I wanted a white one. But you know what? I'm not going to complain because Google was really kind enough to send me one. Yeah. And I've been playing with it for about 48 hours. And I'm very, very delighted. It's very, very great.
I'm really interested in talking about not just the hardware, but what's new in KitKat 4.4. Because apparently Google has kind of pulled a Facebook on their launcher. But we will get to that in a minute. I'm sure I've ordered my 5. I should get it. They shipped it. You know, they said we'll ship November 5th or November 8th. But they shipped it almost immediately, like November 1st or 2nd, although it's still not coming until Thursday. I bet I get it a little early. I don't know. I paid for the two business day shipping.
Sucker!
Yeah, I think I was. I think I, because then they're now, UPS has it, but they're just going to sit on it until November 8th.
I'm just saying that because in the past, when I've ordered stuff from Google Play, it has made very little difference. Because I think since we're in California, you know, it's just probably sitting in a warehouse like in Oakland right now. Right. And we're all like, oh, man.
I want it.
All there.
Well, we're going to talk about all of that in a second. But before the show, we did a little Twitch special, number 172, if you want to watch it. Because, of course, the other thing that came out this week, same day, iPad Air. Became available in stores November 1st, and there were people lined up to get one. I was lucky enough, John Slanina from our office went down to the Apple store and picked me up an iPad Air. And what we did, of course, as always, the folks at iFixit.com flew to Oceania. They went to Australia to be the first, because that's where the day begins, and did their first iFixit teardown. Right now, at the iFixit headquarters in San Luis Obispo, Kyle Weens is there with Miro, who is tearing down an Air. Hi, Kyle. Hi, Miro.
Hey there. Hello.
Welcome back.
On iPad Air teardown number 2.
So I see that you have now removed the batteries. That was the thing that was most concerning, right?
Yeah, so we got the batteries out. We managed not to puncture them in the process. You can see we warped them a little bit, getting them out. But I can bend it back.
Oh, they're soft and pliable.
They're soft,
so tell me from the inside, what's different about this iPad?
So this iPad has a lot more in common with the iPad Mini than it does with the iPad 4. And so if I take a look at the inside, like the process of getting components out, you can see along here these are actually glue strips where the main board sat. So we just pulled this out, so we had the main board sitting like this.
By the way, for those not watching video, the main board is a tiny fraction of the total space of an iPad.
Yeah, if you're looking at the overall layout,
it's almost all battery.
Pulled it apart.
Yeah,
you have it about like that. So that's most of the battery.
It's probably 80% battery, 20% circuitry. Right. Yeah,
yeah.
And so if they want to make it smaller or thinner at this point, they have to reduce power consumption or reduce the battery life.
Well, they are doing that because isn't this a smaller battery than the last generation iPad?
Right. This is – it was a, I think, 44-watt-hour battery before, and now this is a 33-watt-hour battery.
That's a big difference.
It's – yeah, they were able to shrink the battery a lot, and that's power efficiencies with the A7 and, you know, more efficient graphics processor and a display that's more energy efficient. It's kind of all across the board. They were able to reduce the energy consumption.
One thing that you always do when you do these teardowns is you give the device a repairability score. What kind of repairability does this device have?
So the iPad Air does not do very well. It is on par with the iPad Mini, also known as very, very, very difficult. So the first thing you have to do to get inside is remove the front glass. I've got the front glass and the display here. And the glass is glued into the main iPad. And so to get inside, you have to heat the glass up and work guitar picks and all the way around, cut your way through the adhesive, and then use a suction cup to lift the glass up. So it is possible to repair. We gave it a 2 out of 10. So that means, yes, you can fix it, but be aware that it's going to be a process.
Fortunately, iFixit has the manual. You can actually follow along. Although, I think some experience really helps. I know this is the first time Miro's done an Air, but he's done iPads before.
He's done iPads before. Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of thing. It's absolutely possible to get going starting your own iPad repair business. You know, you get in, you're careful with the first few, and then you sort of get the feel for it. If it's your iPad... the thing that inspires the most confidence is when the screen is or the glass is already broken before you get going, so you don't have to worry about breaking the glass.
And so it's roughly been an hour that he's been taking it apart. Does it get quicker or is it an hour every time?
It will get quicker. He's not using as much heat as we would use if we were going faster. Okay. So we wanted to show you the process.
So
the big design difference with the Air compared to the previous iPad is that there's just a lot more glue, which means more time getting it apart.
And that's been a trend with iPads. Apple's gluing it more and more and more.
They're gluing it more and more because the glue is thinner. It's cheaper to assemble. They don't have to pay people to turn screwdrivers when they're assembling it. But it makes life very difficult when it comes to repair and recycling.
Score 2 out of 5? 2 out of 10?
2 out of 10.
2 out of 10?
In contrast with like the Nexus 7, which got a 7 or 8 out of 10. So
yeah, I've pried the back off my Nexus 7 with a fingernail. You don't need any spudgers or heat.
You don't need a tool or anything. You can just pop it right off. And I think replacing the battery is a consumable. It's something that wears out after a year or two. Everyone should be able to replace the batteries in all of their devices.
I agree.
And I don't think that it's environmentally responsible to make a device with a battery this hard to remove.
Well, that's the other side. It's not merely a repairability issue. It's a recyclability issue because a recycler needs to take it apart in order to responsibly recycle it.
Right. And there's been discussion. The environment minister in Germany last year said that he thought they should ban sales of the iPad in Germany because of the non-removable battery. So there's a growing backlash in the international community about device designs like
this. Is it two the worst you've ever seen?
The worst tablet that we've ever seen is the Surface Pro 2. So we took that apart last week, and it got a 1 out of 10.
Jeez. glue there as well?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Was it glue?
It was glue and screws. I mean, sort of unnecessary glue and screws. So where Apple's design, we thoroughly understand why they did what they did. With Microsoft, we're still scratching our head a little bit trying to figure out why they designed
it. Pretty much says it all right there. They did what? Why?
So I have a question about this, guys, actually.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Burn, Leo.
I was watching the special earlier, and it was very interesting, and you were talking a lot about repairability and environmental friendliness. But I had a question that you didn't really answer straight up. Would Apple be able to make a device as thin and as compact if they were doing it more responsibly, if they had a few more, you know, screws, if they had the battery more easily upgradable? Is that possible or not?
I think that's a really good question. The only way to know for sure would be to set up a design team and try to do it. And if you could do it, then it would be possible. So I can just speculate. I think they could come very close. I don't know if they could get quite as thin. But I think we're talking about fractions and millimeters. I think Apple cares about fractions and millimeters.
So the original iPad was a bit thicker than the iPad Air for sure. But it used to have these clips around the perimeter that held the front panel in place and made the opening procedure probably 10 times easier. The thing is, those clips would still fit within this perimeter. So I'm not, you know, like Kyle said, we can't really speculate because we're not designing these things. But just from the looks of it, I don't see a reason why they couldn't do the same thing with the iPad Air.
Yeah, Apple's design team starts with constraints. The management, Tim Cook and Johnny, say this is what the product is going to be, and then the designers and engineers have to figure that out.
Right.
And if a replaceable battery was a design constraint, I think Apple's engineers could create a phenomenally elegant tablet with a removable battery.
Kyle Weens, iFixit.com. Miro, thank you for joining us. It seems like you're an hour later. Almost done.
We're almost done. So I've got the almost cables clean out. Yeah, so this is almost empty. You can see we've got the SIM card left, which is glued down. So we got to unglue that and some of the buttons around the side.
Yep. Now, here's the question. Can you put that back together again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, good.
This will go back together. This might be my new iPad.
Oh, awesome. You're a brave man, Kyle. iFixit.com if you want to see the full teardown. Their philosophy, which I completely agree with, is you own it, you ought to be able to fix it, repair it, play with it. But also, even farther than that, you got to consider recyclability and reusability. These things could go 10 years if you could replace the battery. The solid-state stuff's not going to fail. And I got to wonder about places like the L.A. School District where they float a 30-year bond to buy every student an iPad that's going to last 2 years. And they're going to be paying for it 30 years from now.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. You got to have a long-term strategy with this technology.
Wow.
Two years is too short.
here's a question for you, Kyle. This is Miriam. So is there, you know how Apple has a battery replacement program for like the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro Retina and the iPhone, correct?
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing for the iPad then.
No, they do. They have a battery program. I believe it's $129. Okay. The battery isn't covered under warranty.
Yeah.
It's pricey. They won't do it under warranty. They have a $129 option. You have to give your device to them. You know, they take their time with it and get it back to you.
Right.
The interesting thing is that Apple doesn't replace very many batteries. And even at $129, you'd think there'd be a lot of people doing it. But I think their sales reps proactively try to talk people out of it.
Well, why replace really a battery everything? When you could get the brand new iPad?
Yeah. I did the battery replacement once on a MacBook Air 11, my first generation 11, that my spouse is currently using. And, you know, it was $99, but it's definitely cheaper than buying a new Mac. And he's perfectly happy.
It is for a Mac, but $129 on a $499 product, that's the different equation. That's one quarter of the total cost. I mean,
but it's three quarters of the insides, as we just saw. So
that's true.
You're actually getting
in terms of volume, it's a great deal. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Miro. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
iFixit.com. You guys are great. Really, really love the work they do. You're watching Twit with our great panel, Miriam Juare, Ted Stevens, Tim Stevens. Who is Ted Stevens? Am I thinking of Ted Bundy?
Former Alaska state governor.
That's right. Governor of Alaska. Yes. The senator from Alaska. Who could ever forget Ted Stevens? I'm sorry, Tim.
Me too.
He's the guy, didn't he? Isn't he the guy who said the internet is full of tubes?
Yes, a series of tubes. It's not a big truck. It's not a big truck.
The series of tubes.
Oh, never be forgotten.
That's kind of a classic meme.
And, of course, Patrick Beja. Not Patrick. It's great to have you. We're going to take a break when we come back. There is lots of news, including the good news that you can now take your device and keep it on gate to gate, thanks to the FAA. They said, you know what, all this time, it was no problem. But first, a word from Citrix, the makers of the great Go-To Assist product. If you're in IT, and I know a lot of you are, you do support for software, or even just family members, you might be the family IT guy or gal, you need to know about Go-To Assist. It lets you take control of your IT world from a simple cloud-based tool set, gives you a great set of the things you need the most. Of course, everybody, I think, knows Go-To Assist as the leader in remote support. They've been doing it for years. They really do the best. All the tools you need, unattended support, up to 8 sessions at the same time. So you can install and start an install on one and move to the next one, start another install, move on. You get an assay of everything that's running on the system. But now they've got additional modules that I think are really, really useful. Go-To Assist monitoring will crawl your network, tell you all the hardware and software on it. You could set up a dashboard, completely configurable, with warnings, alerts for different problems that are coming up. You're running out of toner, or the bandwidth's down, or the server's down. You can get an instant message, an email, a text message. They also have the service desk now, which allows you to log incidents, track the resolutions, keep track of changes. Everything you need all at once. I love all three, and I want you to try all three free right now. Visit GoToAssist.com. Use the promo code TWIT. This will make you a support hero. And if you're looking at making a business, maybe a managed services business, this would be a great way to take the next step up. It's very affordable. I really like this. GoToAssist.com. The promo code is TWIT. You know, as long as you got the Nexus 5, I presume that, Tim, you've ordered yours.
I have not, because I'm on Verizon, and, of course, that is the one cure that's going to be left out, sadly. Although, you know, I'm kind of regretting my position on Verizon here. Verizon's got great coverage where I am, but man, they just seem to be lacking the phones lately. So, no, I have not ordered a Nexus 5, but I am envious of those who did.
There was some debate over whether Verizon had pissed off Google and, you know, that they had parted company, but supposedly they're working together on something for next year. Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it definitely seems like there must have been some hurt feelings after the Nexus 7 LTE debacle.
Which still doesn't work, ask Jess Jarvis. Verizon is supposed to be an open network, mandated to be an open network by the FCC. So in theory, they should be able to use the Nexus 7. There's no technical reason not. They say we're still testing it.
Yes, I say.
Well, so as far as I know, the Nexus 7 works with any pretty pre-existing active SIM, right?
Yes.
But I've tested the Nexus 5 and there's nothing. So what that means to me is now I'm in a 700 megahertz area and Verizon is rolling out AWS support. So I can't test in AWS, but I have a feeling that perhaps the Nexus 5 will work on AWS, Verizon, but only data, right? Because the CDMA radio won't kick in unless they have the IMA/ESN in their database.
That's on the Nexus 7,
that's a non-issue. Because
so you can't activate it because Verizon won't activate it, but you could at least use the data.
So in some AWS markets, this needs to be tested. That's the theory right now.
Who pays for that? I mean, how can they bill you?
Well, no. I mean, you have an active SIM already. You have an account.
So you do have an account.
So you have a SIM card. It's from like an existing device that works, and you put it in the Nexus 5, and potentially it might work on AWS, data only. And on the Nexus 7, it's the same thing. If you put it in, but it supports 700 megahertz LTE, so it just works, apparently. I don't know. I haven't tested it. So, but I can say that the Nexus 5 does work great on T-Mobile LTE, on AT&T LTE. And I haven't tested Sprint, but reports are that, yes, it will work on Sprint. So
this AWS LTE, this Advanced Wireless Services, is this the next generation of LTE that will carry voice as well as data? Because I know they want to...
No, this is not LTE Advanced, which is a different thing altogether.
So it's Advanced Wireless Service, but it's not LTE Advanced.
Right. So, yeah, AWS is just a play, like, a, you know, it means that you're using the 1700 megahertz spectrum. You could be doing 3G HSPA plus on that, like T-Mobile does, right? So it's not necessarily an LTE thing. VO over LTE, which is voice over LTE, is what we are all waiting for so that we can kind of break that dependency on CDMA for voice on Sprint and Verizon.
And that's the plan for both carriers, right?
I believe for sure for Verizon, I'm not sure for Sprint at this point, but I mean, they eventually will have to come around and do it. You know, it's just like, it's just a big mess. I think really Verizon is just being a bunch of, you know, shitheads right now.
Sometimes.
It's funny how long it takes you to swear.
You gotta call.
I mean, seriously, look, it's like, it's just ridiculous. Like they like this phone could work on Verizon in a heartbeat. They just refuse to go. They just don't want to do it because, and they're breaking the law. That's the thing that's crazy about this. Nobody's calling them on this.
Well, you know, Jeff Jarvis says he filed a complaint with the FCC.
Yeah.
Not a good that's going to do. They were closed at the time.
So anyway, I think there's a feud between Google and Verizon.
You do think
I'm
so.
I'm not convinced that they're working on some Verizon device. I think this was just Sundar's way of kind of deflecting the question.
Right. He said that a set of projects for 2014 is in the works.
I'll believe it when I see it. And then, you know, it'll be crippled like the Galaxy Nexus for Verizon was.
Right.
And we'll all be bitchy about it.
Storage with no removable micro SD card.
Probably. I will be very – well, I don't care about that. You know, I think SD cards are overrated because Android and most other operating systems don't really use it as – it's not equal to the internal memory. Some apps can be moved there, not if they use widgets. You can store pictures there, but if you're using burst mode, it's too slow, so you have to save it to internal memory. It's just not – it's not like, oh, good, you're extending the memory by 64 gigs.
Yeah, it's definitely the redheaded stepchild of storage on your phone for sure. But you can set up Spotify, for example, to cache to your SD card, which is what I do. And you can download your music there too, which is, again, what I do. But yeah, for photography and for high access stuff, you definitely need it internally. And I think it probably does slow your phone down if you have apps running off of there or if you have a lot of stuff coming off of there. But still, it's a nice option to have for that stuff that you don't need to access as often. And it is frustrating. It's been frustrating to see some devices be kind of gimped on Verizon. You know, they'll have removable storage on other carriers, or they'll even have things like, you know, I have the Note 2, and on the Verizon version, they removed the widget to turn off Wi-Fi just because they want you on cellular data more often. And you only see that on the Verizon version.
There's they removed
like that annoy me.
They removed the setting to turn off Wi-Fi?
You had to dig into the menu to turn on and off Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I hate that.
It's the only carrier that you had to do that on, too. If you get the AT&T Note 2, it's right there.
I pray, and this is why everybody buys the Nexus. Well, not everybody, but then this is the truth is we have to remember Nexus 4 and Nexus 5, as popular as they are with our set, the enthusiast set, are unknown to normal people. But I got to say, the more we use this stuff, the more we want the pure Android experience, unmodified by either carriers or manufacturers. They just crap this stuff up.
They do.
So tell us about the Nexus 5, Miriam. You like it?
Yep.
What do you like about it? So camera, that's going to be, that's always been the weak spot on these things.
It's okay. It's pretty awesome overall, right? I mean, it has all the best of the best, really. I mean, what you're looking at is a slightly diluted G2, right? So you have
you love the G2, as I remember.
I like the G2 a lot. I think that it you know checks all the boxes in terms of specs, but the software is a hassle, like most of these skin phones. So this basically removes you lose the skinning here, which is great, and you get a slightly smaller screen, 5 inches versus 5.2, and 8 megapixel versus 13 megapixel shooter, but you keep the OIS, the optical image stabilization, which I think is one of the most significant thing any phone should have today. And to be noted, Samsung does not have yet on any of their phones.
Interesting.
So the shooter is significantly better than Nexus 4. It's still there's a lack of consistency in Android cameras and Android imaging software that is very, very frustrating. If you pull out an iPhone 5, 5C, or 5S, and you shoot a picture, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a great shot every time within the limitations of the hardware. No OIS on iPhones yet, but it still works really well. You pull out an Android device, and it's a crapshoot. With the Nexus 5, you still have that tremendously, horrendously bad camera from Google, the default Android camera. I mean, it's a total mess. And yes, they've added something called HDR Plus, which works fantastically well. But ultimately, you're looking at, pretty poor experience. And that's what I want to see.
Why is the iPhone so much better? Is it software?
Because Apple's just prioritized that. They've just really put the effort into it. You know what I'm saying? It's like that's their priority, is they want to make sure you get a great shot every time.
Yeah.
And I think somehow the Android cameras just
they're not good.
They just don't seem to care as much. Yeah. And I know that, it's surprising to me that a company like Google that, has Google Plus and all this photography stuff and Vic is a big photography guy, and yet the viewfinder on the Nexus 5 is still landscape, but the pictures you take are still 4x3. So you can never frame a shot properly. Like, to this day, they still have that bug in there. I'll show you.
So you're saying the picture is 16:9, but the viewfinder is 4x3.
It's the other way around. The viewfinder is 16:9.
Because the screen is 16:9, but the picture you get is a crop on that.
Right. So if I take a shot now, of myself.
Yeah.
As you can see, my chin's at the bottom, right?
Yeah. Well, it went.
But
yeah,
if
yeah.
I,
your chin's at the bottom, your hair's at the top. Your eyes are blue. Your lips are orange. Forget it.
You'll get another inch on my chin.
Have you ever taken a selfie?
No, but the point is you'll get another inch on the bottom and top of my head.
Right.
And so you can never
see what you're going to get.
And it's like,
Miriam,
how can they not
fix
that?
Is that the software, the camera app is bad, but the hardware is capable, and you can get a better camera app, or is the hardware not up to snuff?
No, the hardware is fantastic. The camera hardware in the Nexus 5 makes the iPhone camera hardware look like a joke.
Wow.
And so the bottom line is it's all a software issue. The software does not even remotely live up to what Apple's doing.
Is there a reason there aren't third-party camera apps that fix this?
Because there's no low-level access to the imaging processor. And so the camera apps that you get, some of them are very good. I'm very happy with Capture Pro, which I'm using. But they're limited because they can only access the APIs that Android exposes.
Right.
So they can change things like white balance and the basic settings, but they cannot, like, for example, turn on HDR Plus because that's like a baked in feature of the image processor for the Nexus 5. So, yeah.
Now, the other thing I want to talk about is the new launcher, the home launcher. Because I haven't played with it yet. Some have said that Google's taken a page from Facebook and made Google Plus front and center. In fact, it sounds like everything is a Google search. You slide, again, this is from what I've read. You slide left and you've got Google Now, right? That's your left
Yeah. So if you go,
I guess slide right.
That, if you go that way,
there's Google Now. Plus, yep.
Google Now, and then you go back and you get to the launcher, and then you get out of the screen if you want.
Now you could always replace it with a third party launcher. I always put Apex on anyway.
Yeah, and of course you can still go up from the home button like this to get Google Now.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's streamlined. There's a lot of little things, actually. Honestly, it's not very jarring, the changes, but there's a lot of little subtle things. There's a really awesome photo editor now inside the gallery app. There's two gallery apps, which is really weird. There's the old one, which has the new awesome photo editor in it. And then there's a new one, which doesn't have the new awesome photo editor. Like, what? Welcome to Google's universe of madness. What else is there? I don't know. You know, it's just not very, it's just well, a lot of,
we'll have a more detailed review
the OK Google Now thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just OK Google Now. I mean, it's just OK Google, comma, now. That's okay, now Google.
So you can actually say, you know, okay, Google Now.
But it ignores the now. Oh shoot, my phone's responding. Wait a minute. I got a Moto X here.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Every time I say that, it gets excited. It's like a dog. It's like, oh, you're home, master. What can I do for you? So now you say, what do you say? Okay, Google.
Okay, Google. Yeah, not Google.
It's very similar to the Moto X in that sense.
Yeah, but it doesn't do it when it's asleep. So you actually have to have the screen up to do it.
Yeah, that's kind of like other phones. The whole idea of the Motorola phones, the droids, some of the new droids do this too, is that all the time it's always listening, even asleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, in that sense, it's kind of cool. Let me actually just show you. I just turned off Wi-Fi.
I think OK Google Now is too many words. I think even OK Google is too many words. I should be able to just say something. I should be able to make it be anything I want. Hey, phone.
It's funny because it shows you in the search bar normally when you can say it, but right now it's not showing it to me at all, which is weird.
Well, it's
wondering if it's connectivity bound. Like I just had really bad Wi-Fi, so it doesn't show it to me.
Yeah.
But
well, okay, moving on. So that's going to be that's available. Actually, they sold out right away. another wonderful thing about buying Nexus phones. They're not I guess you can get the 32. Let me just check to see. It's changing all the time. 2 to 3 weeks for the 32 in white. 2 to 3 weeks for the 32 in black. The 16 gig, 3 to 4 weeks in white and black. So if you didn't get it right away, you'll get it in a few weeks. The real point of all of this is the price is very low. $350 for 16 gigs, $400 for 32 gigs. Don't buy it at Best Buy. Apparently, Best Buy is charging $799 for it.
They reduced it now. I think they went down to $450.
Scalping.
Yeah, they were.
That's scalping.
It's pretty outrageous. But it's still, the price on the Play Store is still basically, oh, my video is really crappy. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
The phone on the Play Store is still basically unbeatable from a price point of view, right? It's the best phone you can get for that price range by far.
It's like half what other comparable high-end phones would be.
Is it high end or is it mid range?
I can't. There's been a debate.
No, it's high end.
It's high end. People are spec nuts, spec Nazis. Mm-hmm. When the Moto X came out, and everybody goes, I don't like it because it's medium range specs. But that's not it. That's not germane. Look at the phone and see if you like it. Who cares what the processor is? I tell you
where they've cut corners is. The materials are like it's all plastic with glass in the front,
right.
And it's this tough touch, silky plastic. It feels nice, but it's definitely on the cheap side, and that's okay because with $350, you know what? Whatever. Nice. Slightly smaller display and slightly less megapixels on the camera probably saves them some money compared to the G2. Right.
They took the stupid buttons off the back.
Yeah, they did. Although that really never bothered me, but. I can understand how some people don't like it. So it's really weird. Like yesterday and the day before in my little Google search bar here, it would say like, you know, that what I could say, which was like, okay, Google. It's and not now responding. It doesn't say that.
You broke it.
And I've just rebooted it. And it's I have hurt. No idea why that's happening.
You broke it.
It's very odd.
It was the selfie.
It probably was. It's always the selfie.
I was listening to you. It heard you say bad things about its camera, and now it's
angry.
It's got its arms crossed, and it's got in the corner, shaking its head.
In other exactly. Google news, that Channel 5 in San Francisco believes it knows what that barge is. People have thought that Google is building a barge data center, a two-story data center. Channel 5 says, we know, because we've talked to multiple sources, it's a party boat. Google is going to build a party boat with a Google Glass showroom in it. The top deck is a party deck, according to KPIX. The fourth floor is below it. This seems even nuttier than the Google network, whatever center.
Yeah, it seems very unlikely to me as well. I mean, if you're going to have a party for A-listers, it's like, hey guys, let's go down to the docks and have a party. I mean, if there was like a heliport on the roof, maybe they could land their helicopters there or something. But I don't think that's part of the design.
They say they're parking at Fort Mason, which is a nice area. You could go to Fort Mason Center and get on the barge, sail around and the bay.
If you've picked up Google Glass, you know that a big part of the buying experience is they take you to the window where there's always some magnificent view, and then you take a picture. And unless they're going to take you up to the roof, I don't think that's going to work there either, because there aren't any windows on the barge, which means you're going to be, if there are showrooms down below, you're in like, you know, a windowless room to check on glass. And you've got, okay, guys, let's all go up the elevator to try out your new glass. I don't know. I don't buy that myself. I think that the floating server room makes more sense to me.
The project is reportedly, again, Channel 5,
it's a time machine.
It could be anything. The project has reportedly been in planning for over a year now under the oversight of...
How about it's a teleporter, because there's one in Maine.
That's right. They're building another one.
Sergey just wants to be able to get from one side of the U.S. to the other really
it's
fast.
It's all under Sergey's, aegis. The plan is to, quote, upstage Apple's retail stores with dazzling and unusual showrooms. It said that access to Brin's party deck will be on an invitation-only basis. We better get invited to that. Kitted out with bars, lanais, and other opulent comforts. The project is delayed because the Coast Guard says it's a floating vessel, and we better look at it. But it's made of shipping containers. This is when
It's just weird. It seems like someone's pet project, someone high enough up at Google that they had this weird idea, and no one dared to say, you know what, it doesn't really make sense, but so they had to do it because it was the boss.
It's L. Ron Hubbard weird. Is what it is.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, upstage Apple's stores, their good strength luck. Is not that they're dazzling and you know, high-end. Well, of course, they're high-end, but they're retail experiences that make you feel comfortable. They're not a barge somewhere with, like, dazzles and stuff.
Containers.
It's... The one thing that I thought was interesting was the fact that they're supposed to be making... Google Glass demo rooms, and maybe they're getting ready to extend the audience, but well, the install base for Google Glass a little bit, so they want to have a proper place to show it off. But as you were saying, Tim, this doesn't seem like the proper place to show it off. And also, why a barge? Why is it cheaper than to rent a building on land? It's the weird experience of going on the sea, is that going to suddenly make people think, yes, the Google Glass is cooler than I thought? It's weird.
Feld figured out in the chat room. He's building an ark.
Well, it's...
And all the Nexus devices went 2x2.
I don't think it's a sales room. I don't think it's a party barge. I think it's just some weird Google thing, like time machine or like, you know, teleporter or something crazy. They're crazy, you know.
A network operation center made sense to me. So that they have data centers that were floating. You could use. They have a patent for this. They got seawater cooling. They have electrical generation from the waves. That all made sense. Google needs. I mean, can you only imagine the demand that companies like Google and Facebook have for more data centers? That made sense. A party boat made out of shipping containers doesn't sound appealing at all. As you point out, no windows is kind of a negative.
So there are four barges, right? You know that.
There's four of them?
Yeah, there's four.
Where else?
Well, we don't know.
There's Maine.
The two that we know of are rated for passengers, for people. The other two are like freight.
Where are they? We don't know. How do you know there's four?
Because the company that they're registered to has two more barges, and they're all counted in binary. So 0001, 0010, 0011, and 0100 are the four barges.
I'm That's serious. Google.
Google it.
That's Google.
Bravo.
That's definitely Google.
And so they're up to something. The fact that there's four and two are passengers, I'm telling you, this is the beginning of the Borg collective. This is how it all started.
I bet they can all combine and form like a giant robot, and then they can just kind of stomp on Google. And then Google spaceship or the Apple spaceship takes off, and they get in this massive battle. And oh, it sounds amazing!
The Voltron Google. If nothing else, they've had the entire Silicon Valley and tech world talking about it for like 2 weeks. So if they engineered this somehow to create a kind of buzz and then reveal something new. It is brilliantly executed. So maybe that's it in the end.
Somebody said this is how you know a company has reached its peak and is now beginning its decline is when they build a massive new multi-billion-dollar campus, Amazon and Apple. They start spending a lot of money because they're at their peak. But almost inevitably, especially in the tech industry, when a company hits its peak, what's next? Not another peak.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
No,
that's I don't know. I mean, all of these two companies you're talking about are doing very well. And I don't see them, you know, maybe Apple, it's debatable. I would argue against the fact that they're, you know, losing their magic touch. But Amazon is nowhere.
Amazon's building a big downtown Seattle headquarters. It's like crazy, right?
Yeah, sure. But I mean, there's no indication that Amazon is doing anything other than keeping going up. You know, they're not stopping anything that was spectacular, and now they've lost their touch on anything. They keep going steadily, doing interesting new things, or even if they're not new iterations.
Look at this. This is as crazy as the barge. This is a biosphere that Amazon wants to build in downtown Seattle.
Hey, why not? I'm all for these crazy projects, you know, because they have so much money, they can do it. Who else is going to be the mad scientist?
Yeah, exactly.
And I want them to have an underground lair. Come on.
Okay, you're right.
Built into a volcano. Okay. Absolutely.
You're right. Google nears smartwatch launch. According to the Wall Street Journal, Google is talking with Asian suppliers about mass production on a watch, late stage development. Sounds like they're going to beat Apple to the market, and that's worked out well for Samsung.
Samsung was a device that wasn't thought through. Well, at least it felt like a device that was hot. Watches are hot right now. Let's do one. What can we do? Let's just, you know what, just put something together. It doesn't feel like Google would do something like that. Everyone's been talking about Google Now, which would be a perfect candidate for a watch. It seems like that would make sense. Either way, I don't think Google is just going to throw something together just for the hell of it. So I would be more interested in seeing what Google has to say than what Samsung had to say.
And Microsoft, of course, is making Google Glass eyewear, Google Glass-like eyewear. Everybody wants to be in this wearable business, but nobody's kind of licked it. You know, you have a unique perspective, Miriam, moving over to Pebble now, which is another one of the pioneer wearable watches.
I think, you know, I'm happy to see some competition, but I think they're kind of doing it wrong in the sense that they're forgetting what a watch is all about, which is simplicity and design and colors and materials and choices. And, you know, people easily spend $200 on a watch that just tells the time and has maybe an alarm and a stopwatch. But you know, so, you know, to remain competitive, you have to be affordable, but you also have to remember it's going to be a watch. Right?
But they're all butt ugly. With all due respect, even the Pebble is not attractive.
I mean, this depends on the people you talk to, right? I mean, I think personally, I would love to have more variety and choices for Pebble and colors and in shapes. But I think that we're not there yet. I think that, you know, if you look at the variety of watches out there, like, you know, we need to be able to bring that to fruition and yet make it a connected device that, you know, enhances your phone experience.
Right.
Well, what Pebble did very well,
I think,
Hold on a second. Go ahead, Patrick.
Oh, I was just going to say what Pebble did really well, and which is very important in this market, is that Pebble knew what it was from the beginning, or what it wanted to be. And I think that's going to be really key, because these watches, by sheer reason of form factor, can't be everything. They can't be a mini phone. So you have to choose your battles and execute really, really well on them. Right. And Pebble did that. It chose something that was simple, that it knew it could execute on, and it works for the people who want that.
And I think that's exactly the point, is that we're trying not to have a phone on your wrist. We're trying to be a window into your phone that brings you tiny little moments of awesome, tiny experiences, basically, that are delightful. And that's really what it's about. And if you look at the specs on our watch, that's, you know, compared to like a Gear or even what Google and Apple are working on. I mean, we're not even trying to be in the same league, because we don't believe that's where you want to be. Where you want to be is power efficient. You know, 1 week battery life, you want to be waterproof, because everybody forgets to take their watch off when they go in the shower, and, you know, and swimming. And that brings up the whole ecosystem of apps around, you know, playing in the water. And then there is, you know, the other thing is cross-platform is a huge deal. You have to support more than, you know, one device or two devices, you know?
Isn't that the failing of the Gear as much as aesthetics, is it only works with the Note 3?
Well, the Gear has a laundry list of failings, but
yeah,
the Gear works with like three devices. They're very, you know.
I was a Pebble contributor. I have a Pebble. I wore the Gear for a week. I've tried a lot of these devices. None of them stay on my wrist for very long. I like real watches. I love watches, but none of them are very aesthetic. Or use.
The real watches have a real, they're jewelry, right?
Yes.
So there's something about it. But I think it's a really exciting area right now, because we're sort of at this stage where we know what can be done currently, kind of like before the iPhone arrived or before the iPad arrived. Smartphones existed, but not quite the thing that really worked, that clicked. And this is the same thing with the tablets. So I don't know if Apple is going to crack the watch thing. Maybe Google will. But it feels like whatever will work, if it does happen, is going to be something slightly different in a way that we can't really think of now. So it's really difficult to try and imagine what it's going to be, because it's probably going to be something that we're thinking within the frame of what we know today for these devices. Right. And that's probably not what's going to be very successful to the extent that those companies want those products to be.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with our guest, Miriam Juare from Pebble Watch. Nice to see you. It's getpebble.com, right? Are you thinking? Are you sure? Are you frozen?
It's getpebble.com.
Indeed. Can she hear me?
I think she's frozen.
Sorry. My Wi-Fi is, I have no idea what's going on with it right now, but it's like every few minutes or so, it dies.
You look great, though. I mean, the quality of the video is fabulous. Your audio is great.
That's what I'm saying. It's weird that it's not scaling down when it's kind of failing, because, right. I mean, I can't hear you guys and you can't hear me. Yes. So Pebble's at getpebble.com. You can order our watch there, we deliver worldwide. And, of course, there's Best Buy stores in Canada and the U.S. and AT&T stores.
But they're selling them for $800 at the Best Buy store. So, no, I'm 800? Kidding.
Ha. Off contract, Liam.
I'm just kidding. Tim Stevens is here. Tim, are you now? I know you're at CNET. What are you doing at CNET?
I'm doing feature work at CNET primarily. I did just do the iPad Air review, but that's a bit of an unusual thing for me. I'm primarily focused on feature stuff. So I did a big feature on a future farm in Japan, and I did an unveiling of the Surface Pro when that was announced. I've got some stuff coming up on the automotive front in the near future, and I'm going to be launching a new column soon, too.
Awesome. I know you're a big automotive buff.
I am indeed.
So it'd be nice to see you doing some of that. That's great. Well, in fact, let's get your review of the iPad Air next. Also with us from France, Patrick Beja, not Patrick. So what's the latest with you don't do the Phileas Club anymore, right?
No, I stopped. Unfortunately, some things had to go. I guess the latest is a show called Positron, which is basically something, a show against boredom. If you're bored, listen to the show, and we'll recommend things that you can get digitally that are fun and cool and awesome.
Oh, and is it in English or French?
Oh, it's in French, unfortunately. I'm sorry. But you can practice your French, people. So
it's a great way to practice your French. That's positive right there.
Yeah. Actually, the best way to practice your French is probably to listen to Le Rendez-vous Tech, which is about tech. So you already know how half the words we're talking
are English.
There you go.
You know what I've been using, which is awesome, is this thing Duolingo, which is a website and an app from Carnegie Mellon. And it's kind of got an interesting business model. It's very nice, kind of gamified learning. But it's free because what they're doing is they're offering translations via crowdsourced translations via Duolingo. So I think who's buying those? Somebody, one of the tech blogs is buying these translations. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, I've heard so many good things. I just wish I had more time to play with them.
I know. It'll annoy the hell out of you if you start it up and then it says, come on, you haven't practiced. Come on.
I don't need that in my life.
So how does it work? It encourages, it sends you phrases to translate as you're learning the language. So wouldn't they be poorly translated?
No. I don't know how the crowdsourcing works. Let me just, I have a Duolingo account. So let me just quickly, so I'm learning Spanish, right? So it has a whole skill tree as you're doing it. You work through. It's really quite well done, the lessons. It makes it easy. So select the correct image, the apple. Well, that's easy. There's a picture of an apple. So I'm learning it's La Manzana. And then it says okay. And it gives you nice little sounds.
Una manzana.
And now I'm going to say, now I have to translate this English to text. The man eats an apple, and it really works you along in a very
that's great
fun way. You learn about conjugations, and you work up harder and harder.
Come una manzana.
And I think once you, this is the web version. There's actually very nice app versions, and I think once you get good at it, that's when the crowdsourcing comes in. I'm not sure. They certainly wouldn't want me to translate Spanish at this point, unless it's something about eating apples. I'm really good at that. I'm very good at that.
It's apple season here in New York, too, so good time.
Oh, I love them apples.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, we used to go out, and we'd go up, and we'd go pick your own apples up there in up New York State, and then...
Yeah, there's an orchard right down the road from me. My neighbor's actually got an orchard, and it's a good time for that. Lots of apple cider donuts are being consumed as well this time.
Cider is so good.
Mm-hmm. And then language are you going to learn, Tim?
I would love to learn Japanese, but that's not an option in there just yet.
No.
Plus, I don't know that I have the time or commitment to learn Japanese. I've heard it's an amazing undertaking. But if Japanese pops in there, I might give it a shot.
It's right now, it's the Romance languages, French, Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Well, German's not a romantic language. German.
Just watch anime, Tim. That's how I did it.
Do you speak Japanese from anime?
Yeah, I actually lived in Japan for a few years.
Wow.
And I learned at university. I'm kidding. I didn't learn. But I went to university. I went to university because I loved manga and anime so much.
Oh, cool.
Originally. So
that's neat.
And then I fell in love with the country.
You really are a nerd.
I absolutely am. Yes.
Yeah. You come by.
I
honestly.
I am unapologetically nerdy.
Oh. Our show today brought to you by my friends at stamps.com. Why go to the post office? You can print your own stamps, your own postage from stamps.com using your computer, your printer. You don't need any special inks. You don't need a postage meter. You just need a stamps.com account. You even get discounts you can't get at the post office. The post office loves stamps.com. They give you significant discounts on a lot of different classes of mail. Stamps.com, of course, always has the right postage. They know even when the postage goes up, you don't have to buy new stamps. They know. You'll even get this great USB postal scale with your new account, which means you'll always know exactly the right postage no matter what you're sending. It'll print right on an envelope if you send out bills or informative mailers or that kind of thing. Even with your company logo, automatically prints the return address, takes the mailing address from QuickBooks, your address book. If you sell on Amazon or eBay or Etsy or use PayPal, they'll interface directly with those, too. They'll even fill out the international forms. We asked some of our listeners who use stamps.com because of the ads to tell us how they use it. And one of them was Colin Heller. He's the co-founder and VP of operations at Simple Bills Corporation. You know what? What they didn't tell me is what Simple Bills does. We could guess. It's maybe billing made simple. I don't know. But one of the things that they end up doing is sending out a lot of mailings. He says, we used to carry our mail to the post office and wait in line. I don't know why they would do that. Oh, that's neat. They take all the bills and they put them together. And if you've got roommates, they divide it up. Clever. Clever business. Now he uses stamps.com. He says he could purchase postage at a discount, print labels. The company can apply directly to the packaging. He really likes stamps.com. I want you to try it. Now, this is how Bill got started. I'm sorry, Colin got started. He went to stamps.com. You might be tempted by that $80 offer, but don't do it. Click the microphone at the top of the page. Enter in our offer code TWIT, and that $80 bonus value turns into $110 bonus value, $55 in free postage you can use over the first few months of your account. You get that scale. You only pay shipping and handling on that. But to make up for it, a $5 supply kit, and of course, 4 weeks free of stamps.com. I want you to try it right now. Stamps.com, before you do anything else, click that microphone at the top there. Use our offer code TWIT, and you will just say goodbye to the post office forever. Stamps.com. Real quickly, let's check in with Tom Merritt, see what's coming up on the week ahead. Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News today. Of course, the YouTube Music Awards today and the end of daylight saving time. Monday, November 4th, the Defrag Conference in Broomfield, Colorado kicks off. Tuesday, November 5th, GigaOhm's Roadmap Conference kicks off in San Francisco, and AOL reports their earnings. Wednesday, November 6th, the Tech Policy Summit happens in Napa, California, right there in Twit's backyard. AdTech New York is kicking off that day as well, and Fast Company Innovation Uncensored. Thursday, November 7th, Groupon reports their earnings. And Friday, November 8th, the iPhone 5S and 5C are coming to Boost Mobile. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
What a week, huh? Tom Merritt, Monday through Friday, TNT Tech News Today, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We are now on Standard Time, so UTC has changed. It is 1800 UTC every Monday through Friday. Are you watching? Are you guys watching the YouTube Awards? Are we?
No.
No?
No. I forgot all about that.
Remember, that was so horrible. What was it? A few years ago, it was just such a nightmare.
The one with Katy Perry.
Katy Perry, that's right.
Yeah.
So
I have to tune in though.
They got Lady Gaga, Eminem, Arcade Fire. This is much more serious than it was.
Now they're getting serious.
Now they're getting serious. 167,000 people watching it.
I know what it is, Leo. The barges. YouTube. It's the YouTube Awards.
Well, they got an ad right up front, 28-second ad right up front.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We don't have to show the ad. That's okay, Brian.
it's the hamsters. I love that.
It's those Kia hamsters.
You know,
I don't know.
Kind of, they made them skinny, though. That doesn't work.
Look at them. Now you can watch it. They're skinny. They look like the hamsters look like Justin Timberlake. That's a little weird.
Hamsters.
All right, so let's just see what's going on. People with long hair talking into microphones. There's smoke. Oh, this is one of those things where they put colored dust. I don't know. Shouldn't there be more than 168,000 people watching this right now?
There should be. There should be.
That's how many people watch us.
It's twice that many.
Yeah.
You should do a music awards show, Liam.
Maybe I'm missing the boat.
Literally.
Are you sure you're watching the right video?
I don't know. How do you know?
I don't know.
They got 76,000 upvotes, 18,000 downvotes.
Yeah, I'm watching it now, too. Yeah. 172,000 we're up to. Maybe
it's growing.
Okay, so there you go.
So these are video. This is like them competing with MTV's Video Music Awards.
But so are they celebrating the YouTube stars?
Well, that was the mistake they made in 2008. Well, you know, they have Tay Zonday, you know, going chocolate rain. And that, you know, now this looks like it's Nicki Minaj, it's Lady Gaga, it's, you know, it's the big stars, Eminem.
Well, they do seem to have, you know, the epic rap battles.
Oh, yeah, okay. So this is a YouTube phenomenon, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they're mixing the two.
There you are, because then it's Taylor Swift mixed with epic rap battles. What category could this possibly be?
Well, I guess, yeah, music videos and Taylor Swift and Eminem are definitely some of the most watched videos on YouTube.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense. I mean, doesn't YouTube replace MTV for music videos? Nobody watches it. You don't watch MTV for music videos. You haven't in years.
Yeah, because they don't have them.
There is still an MTV, but it's a reality show network now.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, if they don't have Miley Cyrus twerking, I don't want to watch it. So there you go. Let's talk about the iPad Air, the new thin iPad. We took it apart at the beginning of the show, but Tim Stevens, you've actually spent some time. How long have you had to review it?
I had, let's say, about a week to review the iPad Air, so a fair amount of time. And yeah, I found myself quite enamored with the thing. I mean, it's obviously nothing significantly different from a usability standpoint from the fourth generation iPad. But I always found the older iPads to be like surprisingly heavy. Every time I pick it up, I think, oh, this thing is heavier than it should be. And now, you know, it feels lighter than it should be. I remember the first time I picked up an iPad mini last year, and I was surprised at how thin and light it was. As much that same sort of initial sensation when you pick up the new iPad Air. It's very thin, very light. But yet, impressively, the battery life tests that we ran came out almost exactly the same as the fourth gen iPad. So it scored, I think, 13 hours on our rundown test, which is exactly the same as last year's. And that's despite having about one-third less battery, I think, if I remember correctly, from the iFixit guys were saying before. So it's quite impressive. And the benchmarks are, you know, off the charts compared to last year. It's roughly, you know, 75 to 100% faster than last year's model in most tests, which is again, quite impressive considering you got less battery on board. Indeed, in some of the benchmarks, the single-core performance of the A7 was better than the dual-core performance of the A6X from last year, so that's also impressive. It is running slightly faster than the A7 in the iPhone 5S. I think it's 100 megahertz faster, so it's clocked up a bit. And I'm actually curious to see what they clock the A7 at in the iPad mini Retina that's coming up. I'm wondering if they'll keep that at the iPhone 5S speed, maybe to give the Air a bit of an advantage in the performance side. I don't know. Just scheming a little bit there. But performance was great. Battery life is great. It's really thin, really light. I think I like the new shape a lot better. It's more comfortable in the hand. You can find the buttons a lot more easily. My only complaints were one, which is kind of minor. There are stereo speakers now, which is nice, but they're both on the same side, which is unfortunate. I would have liked to see one of the speakers on the top, so when you hold it sideways, you actually get stereo sound.
They're about as close together as stereo speakers could get.
Yeah, it's better than before, but
separated by the lightning cable for it, right?
Yeah, and it is much louder than before too, so that's good. But it would have been nice if they put the other speaker on the top where it should be. The other complaint, of course, is the lack of Touch ID. That's the fingerprint sensor in the iPhone 5S, of course. And while, you know, most iPads never leave the home, according to most studies, that's
really
true. So security is not really an issue here as much, but still, it's more of a convenience thing for me because, you know, every time you buy something in the iTunes App Store or download a song or something like that, you have to type in your password, which is really annoying. But on the iPhone 5S, of course, you just hit the home button with your finger. And you get signed in automatically.
It does spoil you, doesn't it? After you use that for a little while.
It's just like keyless entry on a car or something like that. Yeah. You know, if you ever go to a car that doesn't have that, you're like, I don't want to open the door again. So the first time I turned on the iPad Air, I had my finger, I hit the home button, held my finger there, and was thinking, what's wrong with this iPad? It won't sign me in. And I had to type in my password.
Do you think, as Run With Scissors says in the chat room, that Apple is slow playing it, that they could put a sensor on here, but that gives them something to sell next year, right?
I'm inclined to think so. If you look at what they did with Siri last year coming out, I think it was last year in the 4S first, or 2 years ago, I'm sorry, it was in the 4S first and then it came out later. I think it's very similar here. We'll probably see it on the next generation iPad, and it'll be something exclusive for the 5S for a little while. But then again, you know, it's possible that came late to the game and the iPad design is a little bit further along and maybe they couldn't fit it in there. Or maybe it's a thickness thing too, that the iPad Air is thinner. But yeah, I'm not sure. If anything, it might give them something extra to throw in.
Supply
like
constraints.
Pro. It could be that too, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Tim, do we know if the iPad Mini with Retina has stereo speakers as well?
It should, yeah. The current Mini has stereo speakers, so the
Retina does. Okay,
well.
I wasn't sure.
It does, yeah. Okay. But it's the same thing. They're both on the same sides, and it's very, very difficult to tell the two channels apart.
Well, that's kind of interesting too. Is that the for the first time the Mini with Retina is functionally the same as the Big Brother iPad?
It is, yeah. Same CPU, same RAM, same resolution. The only question again in my mind is the clock speed on that A7, which we'll have to wait and find out. We can run some benchmarks on it. But yeah, I mean, for me, I like last year's Mini better than the fourth gen iPad. And this year, I mean, I'm pretty excited to see what the new Mini with Retina can do. If it's got similar specs and similar battery life to the iPad Air, that to me will be the one to get.
I'm curious if you had the same reaction I did. I've only had it for a couple of days. I got it on Friday. That I was surprised, almost immediately started using it in portrait mode, not landscape mode. The older
Yeah,
because of the narrower bezels, I just felt more comfortable. I was typing with my thumbs, which I can't really do on the previous generation's iPad. It just felt natural in a portrait mode. And I think just a little bit thinner, a little bit lighter was enough to make that transition. I'm a big fan of, as you are, the Mini. And I will be in line to get the Mini with Retina. I think that's the one I want.
I'm very excited by that, too. I can't imagine what could be wrong with it, especially for $100 less for similar specs, if not identical specs, to the iPad Air. I mean, if you want the bigger display, obviously it's a great tablet for sure. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I think it's fantastic. It's a really nice update over last year. But yeah, I'm really excited to test out the Mini.
Apple's big problem is it's a lot faster, et cetera, but, I mean, I could tell the difference in speed. But I didn't feel – I don't even have an iPad fourth generation. I go back to the third generation, and I didn't ever feel like it was slow. And I think that's going to be a problem with consumers. They're just going to say, well, okay, but there's no reason to trade in my old one for a little thinner, a little faster.
I'm keeping my iPad 3.
It's fine.
I'm a tech enthusiast, so
yeah.
Definitely understand what you're saying.
Do you disagree, Tim? I mean – What isn't that the challenge for Apple, is to convince people to upgrade?
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think one of the mistakes that they've been making for the past few generations is that, you know, the iPads looked exactly the same, especially if you go from third to fourth generation. There's really been no differentiation between them. So having a new style at least gives people some reason to upgrade, because now they can actually look and feel something significantly different from before. So that's nice. But ultimately, you know, the rule of thumb has typically been, you know, if you've got last generation, don't bother. If you have the second generation before, maybe think about upgrading. If you're three generations old, it's probably time to get the new one. And I think that more or less rings true here. But I'm also curious if Apple will come out with something new, because they did change the name to be iPad Air. Right. I've been wanting them to do a Pro tablet and a Pro phone for a long time, and I think this is a great opportunity for them in 2014 to slot in a slightly larger, more powerful, maybe something with a stylus tablet. I think that'd be fantastic. I think the market would really,
really
like that.
A stylus?
I mean, think about it. How many? I know.
Never gonna
happen.
Supposed to
have 10 of them.
That
right
seems
here.
Like it's moving a little bit backwards.
Think about it. How many Apple designers and graphic engineers have some sort of a Wacom stylus sitting at their desktop that they spent a ridiculous amount of money to get? And if you could have an iPad that would double as that functionality, but you could also pick it up and take it to a meeting and then pick it up and take it home with you, I think a lot of Apple's professional users would really, really dig that sort of thing. They'd pay big bucks for that sort of thing, too. And it'd be an interesting product. I would love to see that kind of thing. I don't know whether we'll actually see it, but I think that'd be a pretty cool product.
You're not the only – it's not – Tim's not a crank. He's not the only one calling for this, and I understand that.
Well, I'm going to be frank.
If you play with the Note 3 or the Note 2 or even the Note 1, you realize there is some value to a pressure-sensitive stylus on a tablet. But remember that Steve Jobs, the big thing when they announced the iPhone was, no stylus, your finger is the stylus.
Yeah, if you see a stylus, you blew it, was his quote. And Task Manager, too. But I think you could argue that being able to kill tasks in iOS is something of a task manager. But, you know, he was talking about the usability of keyboards and things like that on a smartphone. And ultimately, you know, there have been styluses on Apple's for forever. And I don't think that would be breaking anything. But ultimately, he also said, you know, this is the right size for the phone, and they changed that, too. And you know, rules are meant to be broken.
Yeah. No, that's right. And Apple's many times turned around and done exactly the opposite of what Steve said, even on Steve's watch.
I think this new iPad is the first one that I'd consider getting. I mean,
you don't have an iPad? You've never had an iPad?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll review units. It's a mini, but you know, I have a mini, but the size is like the original iPads were so big. The 2, the 3, the 4, they're all terribly big. So I don't know. This is appealing. This is really sexy to me. This is the prettiest tablet. That's a 10-inch or 9-inch tablet I've seen.
It is gorgeous, and this is where Apple really knows what they're doing. I mean, the look and the feel and the styling. It's not recyclable. We know it's not repairable, but it does. It really feels good in the hand. That having been said, I am a mini fan, and I wonder, I don't know if they've broken down the sales figures. I feel like the mini must be that's the form factor people really want, right?
Most of the people, definitely. It does seem like it's the most popular of their tablets. And especially now that the Retina is going to be available, that's what everyone was waiting
for.
Right?
That's the one,
But you know, the thing is that the iPad Air is closer in weight to the mini than it is to the previous full-size generation.
Right.
So that's also... And when the mini came out, everyone was puzzled by the price, but it seems that's really not that important for people who want that tablet, and it's selling really well. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that it's selling even better than the full-sized iPad.
Well, one person who will not be buying an iPad, Ashton Kutcher... He's a product engineer at Lenovo now. Does that make you want to buy a Lenovo product? Not me. It makes me want to run the other direction.
I'm a huge Lenovo fan, and me too. Doesn't exactly raise the cred. I've spoken with Ashton. He's a very bright guy, and he actually is very passionate about technology for sure. But ultimately, you know, I just have this immediate negative reaction whenever there are these celebrity executive appointments, like Alicia Keys with BlackBerry, and any of those things like that. I immediately think there's something wrong with this company if they're willing to make this sort
of
move.
It started 2-3 years ago when Lady Gaga made products for Polaroid, which never appeared.
That went.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. And then Alicia Keys at BlackBerry. Shakira is T-Mobile collaborator. Oh, I want a phone Shakira designs. These chips don't lie.
And, you know, out of all of those, Ashton Kutcher is the one that has been showing the most interest.
No, at least
technology.
He has some tech chops. Absolutely. I agree. You know,
but it's very difficult to take this seriously, and I would love to be proven wrong. Ashton, go ahead, you know, do something amazing, but it doesn't sound like
he's just a figure. He's like Betty Crocker. He's not gonna. What is he gonna? Can you imagine how insulting? You're a Lenovo designer. You've been working at this all your life. You've got many degrees. We've brought in Ashton Kutcher, star of that '70s show, here to help you design the next Lenovo. Hope you enjoy it.
And Lenovo's been doing great. I mean, they're one of the few manufacturers who've kind of begun to figure out this whole hybrid ultrabook convertible.
I like the yoga. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas everybody else is really struggling to make that work. But Lenovo's been doing yogas great. They're on their second generation yogas now. And they've got, you know, I think three different model yogas now. And they're all really nice. So Lenovo's got that figured out. They definitely could use some help on the smartphone side of things, I think. But ultimately, you know, I think they're probably looking for more perspective on the U.S. market, and Ashton could probably help in that regard to some degree. And he can certainly help, they think anyway, to raise the brand awareness. This has never worked in the past, and I just don't think it's going to work here.
Ashton Kutcher says, let me tell you, I could say one of the big differences between me and Alicia Keys, I went to school for engineering. Well, I didn't graduate, but I learned to program when I was 19 years old. And I work on a daily basis with engineers that are building some of the finest software products in the world today. I bet if you asked a lot of these people what a MySQL database is, they'd probably run the other way and not even know what it is.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Yes, Ashton.
Well, at least, you know, I came into the show fully prepared to shoot down Kutcher, but it's true. He probably, if he does know what a you know, MySQL database is, it's something.
He walks just like Steve Jobs. That's worth something.
That's exactly why they hired him, because he's Steve Jobs. They thought they were actually hiring Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Steve's gone, but we've got Ashton Kutcher. There's the good news and there's bad news.
It's good proxy.
So this is definitely a marketing move. Does anyone think it's going to help them in that department?
No.
Is it going to build brand awareness?
Did he build brand awareness for, was it Canon he was doing the ads for? Nikon?
I think it was Nikon, wasn't it?
See, shows what, yeah, I saw a lot of those ads. I don't know. Didn't make me want to run out and buy Nikon glass. All right. We'll move on. I want to talk a little bit about the airplane decision. I think that's a big deal.
Roger Victor.
I flew home on Friday.
What's your vector, Victor? And 4K video on its way from an unlikely source. But first, if you missed anything on Twit this week, you missed a lot. Let's take a look.
On Twit, Tech News Today.
Cecilia Abade just received a ticket for driving while wearing Google Glass.
There's a very clear solution to this, guys. Self-driving cars.
This week in Google.
Google Plus increased the number of objects that Google Search can recognize inside your photos to over 1,000.
You can even search for people's names.
I forgot I had this video. This is Henry, my son, reading for the very first time.
Oh, he has a Hogwarts shirt on. Oh,
GizWiz.
This, my friends, is a lifespan treadmill desk. I've been walking.
Were you walking the entire
this
time?
This whole time.
I have a better way for you to get exercise.
What is that, Dick?
We've got technology out the squeaker.
We do. We have. That's our new slogan. I hope you like it. Technology out the squeaker. Show today brought to you by our friends at Audible.com. Audiobooks for me were a lifesaver when I was commuting to Tech TV. I first joined Audible in the year 2000. I remember 13 years. And I was about to kill somebody. Commuting 2 hours a day, it was just a nightmare. I was so tired of the commute and so tired of bad traffic and rush hour. And that's when it really changed my life, because I started listening to audiobooks, and all of a sudden, I don't want to get out of the car. I drive around the block a couple extra times. At the gym, on the treadmill, nothing more boring, but boy, it sure is great to listen to books from Audible.com. I want you to visit Audible.com, and you'll be amazed, just even on the front page, you'll say, oh, I'd like to read that. Oh, that looks interesting. Oh, that's a good book. How about this? The Summer of Beer and Whiskey. You had me at beer. How Brewers, Barkeeps, Rowdies, Immigrants, and a Wild Pennant Fight Made Baseball's America's Game. It's a baseball book. I just listened to, I'm going tonight to see Ender's Game. Don't tell me. No spoilers. I had read Ender's Game. In fact, I listened to it on Audible. They have a great 20th anniversary edition of Ender's Game. But I wanted a refresher, and this was great. I have to say, it's the full cast audio play. It's not the book itself. In fact, Orson Scott Card wrote the script for this. And they've got really great performers. And it reminded me how much I love listening to radio drama. It's you're listening to Ender's Game. It's a great cast, really, really well acted, and just a lot of fun. I think Harlan Ellison makes a surprise appearance somewhere in that cast. Original music by Janice Ian, and it's really good. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to get you two books free. That's how nice I am. Look at this. The Revolution was televised. I always like reading books about TV. This is The Cops, Crooks, Slingers, and Slayers Who Changed TV Drama Forever. Wow, this sounds interesting. This is about The Sopranos, Oz, The Wire, Deadwood, The Shield, Lost, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Battlestar Galactica, 24, Friday Night Lights, and Mad Men, Breaking Bad. So it's the story of those 12 shows with interviews with David Chase and Vince Gilligan. That sounds great. In fact, that's the problem. You go to audible.com. It's hard to choose. Pick two books. Sign up at audible.com/twit2. audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's a 2 books a month subscription. Your first month is free, though. Your first 2 books are free. Cancel any time in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. Those books are yours forever. Audible's just doing a great job. They're recording a lot of science fiction that was never made into audiobooks. In fact, that Ender's Game is an Audible Studios production. 40 actors, 100 roles. Really, really great. Pick two. Listen. You'll love it. I guarantee it. Fiction, nonfiction. I listen to a lot of history. There's always something great to listen to. Audible.com/twit2. Simon Singh has a new book. He wrote a great book on crypto. His newest is The Simpsons and Their Mathematical Secrets. What could that be? Insight into the celebrated television series The Simpsons. Huh. As an explanation of mathematics, that's just bizarre. I don't even
know.
It's
going to have to do with Homer's gut.
I don't even, yeah.
In the shape of a donut.
It's pie. Pie are squared, but donuts are round.
I somehow lost your video, but hopefully I'm clearer now.
Mr. Brian, would you push that magic button that sends Miriam our video?
Oh!
Ah!
It's Leo.
Yeah, I'm back, baby. Audible.com/twit2. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. You can now fly gate to gate on Delta and JetBlue. Keeping your Kindle going, your phone. We can't use a phone, but you can use the data. No, you can't use the data. You can't use the phone, text, or data, but you can at least play Plants vs. Zombies. From gate to gate, the FAA has issued new guidelines. Interestingly, JetBlue and Delta were on that committee, and they're the first airplanes, airlines to do it. I think there's some face saving here because they said, well, now not every airline can do it until we make sure that their planes are shielded. As if the Kindle.
You know that. You know what I said earlier. That's a load of beep.
I think it's face saving. I don't think there was ever an issue. It was all anecdotal, right?
Exactly. Tim, you fly with Delta a lot, right?
I was on a Delta flight from Detroit to San Francisco when this was announced, as a matter of fact. So I was very excited. I was on GoGo reading the news about it, and I'm very excited to wait. And then so I was on a flight back home on Friday, and I got to use my was playing Fire Emblem on my my 3DS during takeoff. So that was great.
Did you feel a little wicked doing it? Like, ooh, I'm breaking the rule?
A little bit, but I think it was last year I was on a Delta flight and there was a stewardess, an off-duty stewardess who was sitting next to me and she was texting during takeoff. So ever since that, I've pretty much just considered that rule to be kind of bogus anyway.
Here's the video that JetBlue released of the first, they call them PEDs, personal electronic device approved flight. It was flight 2302 from JFK to Buffalo. That's probably a flight you've been on.
It's a short one, so that's one where you definitely want that because you hardly ever go over 10,000 feet.
Right.
It was also unfortunate because Delta had just launched their new holiday-themed instructional video, you know, that they played at the beginning of the plane, which I think this was the first week they were playing it. And, of course, that still says that you had to turn off your electric devices. Wow. So now their new video is obsolete, sadly.
Well, that was one consideration people said is, well, if everybody's, you know, playing games, then are they going to watch the safety video? But I think what that's done actually is create a brisk market in creative safety videos. So
there's definitely a bit of a Cold War going on there. Not even a Cold War. I mean, everybody's doing these wacky, funny videos now that try to keep you interested. The new Delta one's got like reindeer and seats and lots of craziness. For
is
sure.
Is Delta Lena in it though? Because if it's, I'm in love with Delta Lena.
I don't think she was in this.
The
new
redhead
in the
who
last
goes,
one.
No smoking.
She had a cameo in the last one, but I don't think she was in this
no
one.
No.
Don't you love that? Yes. Of course, Air New Zealand is famous for their in-flight safety. They had one with Peter Jackson and a bunch of hobbits. They've just released their newest. Would you like to see it? Featuring, get ready, Betty White.
Oh, my.
They're at a retirement committee.
This is my cousin's grandson and his buddy from Air New Zealand. They were telling me about their crazy safety videos. Well, I said, if you want to know about survival, talk to us, because you're going to want some advice from folks who have been there and done that. So, this is safety, old school style.
Yeah! What did she say?
What's really funny is a little later on, Gavin McLeod, the skipper of the Love Boat, makes it. Here you go.
Gavin McLeod, what's in the box?
Oh, hi, Betty. Oh, this is a priceless antique.
A priceless antique? What is it?
Your sense of humor.
Welcome aboard, Gavin.
Well, I think this is great. I think this makes you want to watch the safety video, right?
Makes me want to go to New Zealand, actually.
Makes you want to go to New Zealand. That's right. They do great stuff. And I think that probably all the airlines will be doing that now because otherwise it's Angry Birds.
So does it include, it's just phones and tablets, right? It doesn't include like the laptops.
It was interesting. They said anything less than 2 pounds, which was an odd sort of distinction for me. So, you know, you could theoretically get away with, I think, like an 11-inch Air, so just under 2 pounds, around 2. So I don't think they would let anybody with a laptop on, but that was their rule of thumb anyway. I'm guessing that'll get refined. The other thing to note is that if you're on a Delta Connection flight, which is, I think there's 7 airlines included there, you will not be able to do this. It's only Delta, the main Delta flights. Any Delta Connection, you'll still have to turn your devices off. And they said it's coming soon, but they didn't know when.
Apparently, JetBlue watches this show. They've just tweeted me, Leo Laporte, Tank Girl, Tim Steve is not Patrick. If it's important to our customers, it's important to us.
Aw, shucks.
But you have to figure that JetBlue and Delta, at least, and probably every airline, we're getting pressure. I know Nick Bilton of the New York Times has wrote a series of articles that really put the screws to these guys, saying, why can't we use our devices, especially like a Kindle? You got the pilot up front. All of them carrying iPads now, all their flight manifests, everything on iPads.
Yeah.
And a Kindle puts out no energy at all. Why can't we use our Kindles? I used to buy People magazine. The only time I ever read People magazine is for air flights take off and landing, so at least I wouldn't have to look out the window and worry.
Well, maybe yeah, they were being lobbied by the magazine industry.
I'm definitely concerned about what this means for the print industry, because I have a couple of magazine subscriptions that I pretty much have exclusively for flights. You know, yes. I'll get a magazine and I'll put it in my bag and I'll try to forget about it until the flight. Then I'll read it on the flight and nowhere else. And now I don't really need those anymore.
Was there, do you think, any real technical issue? Why were these rules?
I think it's just the distraction thing. I think that they wanted people to pay attention. And if there is something that's going to go wrong in the flight, I think that's the time it's most likely to happen. Right. And that's the time that they want you to be paying attention. But ultimately, you know, there's in-flight entertainment, and a lot of those systems work during takeoff and landing. You can listen to the radio during takeoff and landing. So I think that's a little bit of a dubious thing. The other thing is, I don't think they want these devices flying around if there's some sort of an accident.
Yeah.
Something goes wrong, they don't want tablets floating around.
That seems to indicate that for sure.
The 2 pound thing, yeah.
2 pounds, you know, anything bigger than that is going to hurt you if it flies in your face.
Now, I am glad that they, and this is, we might make this point, that they did not approve the use of cell phones in flight. The last thing you want, it's such a pain in the butt when somebody's sitting next to you going, and then another thing, I told him, you can take this job. And nobody talks in a normal voice on a cell phone, they're all shouting. That would be the end of the world, if you ask me. Now, I don't think that's an FAA decision. I think that I've been told that has to do with the FCC. And the real issue is cell carriers don't want it because of the rapid handoffs. If you've got somebody flying 600 miles an hour, cell site to cell site to cell site, they're hammering those sites.
Answered about the 2 pound limit. They said trays need to be up, so handheld only on Twitter. Thank you,
JetBlue. Just they're listening, JetBlue. When are you coming to Albany, New York?
You'll get a tweet.
Okay, I'm listening.
But I mean, about the restrictions and the reason why. I guess maybe they didn't do any testing, but these things, the demand for this is relatively new. It's been probably around 5 years when people started having real smartphones. And of course, with the administration's glacial pace, it's going to take a little bit of time. But in this case, we all know that this is probably not something bad and probably nothing's going to happen. But don't you want them to make sure?
Yeah, you don't want to be the person who picked up your iPad and brought the plane down.
Exactly. Yeah. So you still want, I understand that it's unbearable to, you know, not have your iPad to play on for 10 minutes. But I understand that they wanted to make sure. Now, did they actually use this time to make sure? I guess there's probably a little bit of, they also didn't want to be the first people to say, you know what, go ahead, use it and then make a mistake. But still, what I'm saying is we didn't want them to just hand it, you know, phone it in and just say, oh, it's all right, just use it, never mind, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, but then they say in this article that all the aircrafts have to complete a, quote, carrier-defined PED tolerance test. Not the FAA. The carrier says, well, this is our test.
Mm.
The other thing, of all course, right. is that, and There's I think that you should prepare yourself for this, the FAA may approve it, the carriers may approve it, but each captain is responsible for that flight. And if a captain says, I'm not going to allow it, the rule will still apply.
You're screwed. So, you know, they use iPads for in cockpits nowadays, right?
Right.
For their flight bag or whatever it's called. So yeah. I'm kind of questioning, like, I really don't think anything that's gone through the FCC and has been approved as class B or whatever is going to be a problem, you know? And you were talking about cell handoffs. I think what they could do is have a cell on board the plane,
right,
and allow text messaging only, no voice, no data. And that way you could be on the Wi-Fi for the data and you could just text each other. It would relay to the ground in some way or another. You know, I think that's the future. I'd like to see that, actually.
That'd well, you cool. could use, you know, you can now use Hangouts. You could use Google Voice. You could use messages and use the Wi-Fi and be texting all you want.
For sure. But, I mean, the average person doesn't necessarily know how to do that, right? Yeah. So, I mean, being able to just text is, you know. And then the carriers could charge a roaming fee. You know, it'd be cool. Everybody makes money.
Everybody wins.
JetBlue did just tweet back at me and asked me if Newberg is good enough. And the answer is no, it is not good enough.
You said, wow, I am building an airport. Weird.
This is very weird.
You know, there obviously brands have become very aware of how important it is to interact in social media. There's a very interesting article, I think it was in the Sunday Times today, about Gary Vaynerchuk, which I didn't even know. But Gary no longer, you know, for a long time, he was doing Wine Library TV. He got very well known as a podcaster, and it was his dad's wine business. But apparently, a couple of years ago, he started his own social media agency. So he's actually selling. Let me go to the front page of this article. Here's Gary with his team. He's selling, to big companies like General Electric, social media advice. And one of the things Gary says, his new book is called, let me see, it has the title here, Jab, 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 Right Hook. And the idea is that you jab somebody on Twitter, as by the way, JetBlue is doing. Jab, jab, jab. See, what Gary does, for instance, is say, what can I do for you, any of you, any of my followers? And somebody says, get me a cheeseburger. And a cheeseburger arrives the next day at the guy's house. That's the jab. He'll do that three times. But then the right hook is, now, hey, have you bought my book? And the guy says, well, I'm compelled to at this point. And and so basically the premise, apparently, of this company is everything that goes on Twitter is about selling. I really hate that. And that makes me sad, frankly. I think that's
terrible.
I think that's pollution. That's noise pollution. We'll get Gary on. I like Gary. Gary's a friend, and going back to he convinced GE to mail 314 pies in March, like apple pies, because it was Pi Day.
Wow.
So if you tweeted about pie on Pi Day at March 14th, GE sent you a pie. But only the first. Get it 3.14159. Only the first 314 people. Is that a great strategy for General Electric? I don't know.
Anything that gets them mentioned, I guess.
Don't they sell microwaves?
It's goodwill. It's brand building. They probably got a couple of articles about this. I mean, social media is obviously going to be used for those people that he's counseling or that he's, well, maybe not counseling, but
counseling. Given, no, he's like an ad agency.
Counseling.
Yeah.
They want to get some marketing. It's out of the marketing budget. So they're not doing the Twitter thing out of the goodness of their heart. I'm sure some of it has to do with customer satisfaction, but a lot of it is also, communication and marketing. So in that sense, the cost of 314 pies to get your name mentioned again and again, what is it now? 6, 7, 8 months later on this show?
We're mentioning it. The New York Times just mentioned it.
There you go.
Well, I can understand where they're coming from.
Ah, just depressing to me.
Because, look, pies arrive cold, and then you need to put them in your GE microwave.
Nobody microwaves pies. That's a horrible thing to do to a pie.
I know it's terrible, but that's kind of where they were going.
You're ruining the pie.
I know, but think about their strategy here.
You have to use a General Electric light bulb to see the pie, and then after you eat too many pies, they'll give you an MRI in a General Electric MRI machine, and you'll just feel right at home.
That's the Google strategy. You know, GE is like, the more people eat pies,
right,
the more they need our products.
The motto on an enormous blackboard, according to the New York Times, as you walk into VaynerMedia is, and they said this is the G-rated version, you can supply your own expletives, we love social media because it sells things.
Well, why do you do social media, Leo? I'm sure, to an extent, it's because you like it, but don't you also use it as an, maybe not advertising, but to get your name out there and to get people.
But I think that's when people do that on Twitter or anywhere else, I tune them out and I eventually unfollow them. I want them to provide some value or at least have some conversations or, you know what I'm saying?
Put sure, them up but there. You have the Twit account, which announces.
Yeah,
that
does. That account gives you no value at all.
Well, maybe. I mean, it does get the show advertised,
right? So no, yeah, we use it that way too. But I feel like that seems like the least important use of social media, right? Or maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it's important. It's just not very enjoyable. I guess no one goes to Twitter to get
Give me more ads.
Yeah, exactly. You're not gonna. so customer support maybe, but you're not going to go to Twitter to get GE's pot.
It feels cynical to go onto Twitter and say, okay, ask me for something and then do that for them and then later turn around and say, now are you going to buy my book? It feels a little cynical to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll get Gary on and we'll ask him. Our Twit Live feed, you can follow that. And I consider that more informational than advertising. I don't think anybody follows the feed and then says, oh, look, the show's on and goes to watch it. I think that's more informational, but I don't know. I don't know. See, it's just all. But, you know, if you're following that, you know what you're following. It says what's going on. Do we even do that? Is that our feed or does somebody else do that? We do it? It still. We should update it. It says Twit Cottage. We do it, but just not very well. It's only been 2 years since we've moved.
Even Gary's the jab thing. I mean, if he pays, you know, 3 cheeseburgers to a guy before the guy can buy his book,
that's
probably
net loss.
Not very. Yeah,
it's a net loss.
So I don't know how exact that.
Gary's changed a little bit because originally it was the thank you. What was the thank you culture where you thank people. Now it's the sell you culture.
Well, I guess he's also talking to the brands that he's advising.
Right.
And they want to sell. That's what they see there. So I guess he's sort of repackaging his messaging of you have to interact. You have to show that you care in order to build that relationship with your customers.
Right.
And those brands, the way they understand it is, you know, you're going to make more money.
Well, and I think with JetBlue, the reason it came up is because of JetBlue's responding to us in real time during the show.
Well, tweeting at me, by the way.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what that is engaging in a conversation, which I like. That's what, to me, social media is about, is having a conversation. Mm. I like that. But I don't know. I like Gary. We'll have him on and I'll ask him. Gary, what the hell? By the way, we use his last name as a swear filter. Whenever a swear word appears in the chat room, we replace it with Vaynerchuk. Seriously. I don't know why. We've done that for years. Because it sounds like it's benign, but it sounds like maybe you're swearing. Oh, you Vaynerchuk!
I haven't seen it tested yet. I'm waiting.
Oh, they will. Now that I've mentioned it, get ready. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a Vayner flood.
Oh. It didn't filter me.
Yeah, it did.
It did on the scent. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
What's funny is there's a site, foolishit.com. And anytime anybody types foolish IT, go ahead, type foolish IT into our chat room. It goes FOOLI Vaynerchuk IT. So it's not super smart. Was it because
it's a start, Leo?
Was it because I interviewed Gary and he swore up a storm, and that's where that happened? Oh, now our chat mod Dan is getting into the act. He's upset. He gets mad when I start messing with a chat like this. I'm sorry, Dan. Don't ban me. Don't. Netflix is going to start running 4K videos next year, even though no one has the bandwidth. People do have 4K displays. There are a lot of cheap 4K displays. This Ultra HD has not been defined yet. The color space is not defined. The only thing, in fact, that's defined is the resolution, according to Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. So we're in early days of UHD, so it'd be silly to buy a UHD TV right now. However, if you want to see what 4K looks like on your 4K display and you have the bandwidth, there are 7 videos in the Netflix catalog in 4K, including El Fuente, 24 MP, which is an example of 4K at 24 frames per second. It includes people riding on bicycles, scenes of a wholesale produce market, and kids playing in a fountain.
Hmm.
Gripping content from Netflix. I might, let's start watching El Fuente. It's only 8 minutes long. It's got 3.3 stars.
That might crash the video chat, depending on the bitrate of it.
Actually, yeah, I wonder what'll happen.
Click gently.
I wonder what'll... Oh, I have to install Silverlight.
Oh, Silverlight.
Even Microsoft doesn't support that anymore.
Silverlight.
So where do you guys fall on the 4K thing? Because every time I talk about it, I have a cousin who's completely... He goes berserk every time I mention 4K because he says... anyone who's going to be watching something at a reasonable distance is not going to see the difference between HD and UHD. And apparently he threw a bunch of graphs at me that prove beyond any reasonable doubt that the distance at which it becomes discernible is too short for anyone to be watching their TV at that distance. Is there any truth to that, or what do you guys think?
Well, I think it's like
I've watched them, but you know, typically it's in a like a convention setting, so you're never too terribly far away from them. But you know, I can definitely tell the difference, especially on these larger TVs, 65 inches and above. I think at that point the pixel density gets so low that you can tell the difference. And I think even from, you know, slightly greater than average watching distance, you know, 10 to 15 feet, I think you'd probably be able to tell a difference. But it's not going to be the same sort of thing that we saw going from, you know, 480 to 1080p. That's a huge difference. But as these panels keep getting bigger, I think that resolution will continue to become more important.
You agree, Miriam?
Are you going to be watching your you know, 60-inch panel at, you know,
I have a thought on that, but let Miriam say something, and then I'll,
I was just going to say it's like pixel density on phones, right? You know, you benefit from higher pixel density for other things like font rendering, for example. So I'm not convinced that it doesn't matter, but I think Tim's right. You need to see it on large devices, right? And also the other thing that I've noticed that really makes a difference is, you know, I've seen 8K TVs at CS, and you can tell the difference. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I think 4K is not a gimmick. I just think it's how it's set up and implemented that matters, you know?
This is the argument that your friend's making, Patrick, is the Retina is what Retina is all about. Apple, yeah. Which, and this is a marketing term for Apple, which is not any particular pixel density, but whatever density is required so that you don't see a pixel at the normal viewing distance. And that a 1080p TV at 10 feet is Retina, even though its display is not super high res, because it's of its distance. And when you hold a phone closer, you've got to have a higher pixel density for it to be Retina. I think, though, and maybe this is that same voodoo argument that, you know, vinyl advocates, you know, use to say vinyl is better than digital. But I think there is something that may not be measurable, but you definitely, your brain has a different experience of 4K. And if you've seen a lot of 4K, and we've all seen it at the trade shows, it just looks real. And even on a small display, I was very surprised. Sony had small 4K displays, you know, 20 inches and like that, that were used in video production. And even there, now there you're not 10 feet away, you're maybe only 3 or 4 feet away. But even there, there's something about it that makes it look more real. I think your brain does see it as reality. It looks like you're looking through a window.
That's funny. I did see a couple of 4K displays, and it didn't really do anything for me. But then again, I wasn't blown away by the Retina displays on the, you know, the first portable devices. It was nice, but didn't blow me away. So maybe I'm a special case.
Maybe that some people don't notice it. I hate 3D, for instance. I think that was a big gimmick, but I think 4K will probably end up being a little bit of a gimmick because these companies are going bankrupt. They can't sell TVs. Nobody's buying HD TVs anymore. So they've got to find a new thing to get you back. You know, you're happy, damn it. You're not supposed to be happy with your TV. You got to buy a new one. It's a tough market out there. All of these companies are struggling, losing money like crazy. I personally think 4K is where TV should go. I think 4K and high frame rate, you know, this is what James Cameron, the Titanic and Avatar guy, has been advocating. Movies should be set not only at a super high resolution, but also at a much higher frame rate. And when you get 4K and 60 frames or more per second, it looks pretty darn good. I think it is the difference between SD and HD. It's amazing.
I think frame rate really matters. And I think that I think you have to combine higher res and frame rate to really get the effect. And even like if you get one of them, you kind of get halfway there. You know what I'm saying? Like 4K, but 30 frames per second, or even 1080p at 60 frames per second. You kind of also, your brain does something there, right?
Now, the issue, of course, is content, and it's just for Netflix to say 4K streaming is nuts because it's going to be compressed to hell. I mean, it's not going to look good. You can get 4K on YouTube right now, but you wouldn't know the difference. Anyway, I think it's going to come. I don't know how the content's going to be delivered. What Sony does, they give you a – is it the Red Ray? They give you the special player?
They give you a hard drive with 15
downloads movies. Yeah, over time. Yeah. And then the Red folks are doing a Blu-ray sequel, they hope, called Red Ray. I think it's called Red Ray. That'll be a higher density and big enough, presumably, to accommodate 4K.
How dramatic is the bandwidth increase when you go from, you know, HD to 4K?
Well, it depends on compression.
Sure.
That's what all these guys all these guys say is, no, there's going to be new compression, better compression technology, you know, so that you'll be able to get at only a few megabits per second 4K. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
We're having enough trouble with just Skype right now.
Yeah, right, exactly. We can barely get Skype to work. Although those knives over your left shoulder are very real looking, I must say.
I'm in my kitchen.
I am not going to antagonize you ever again, Miriam. Are those your knives?
Yes, but not that you ever antagonized me.
Those look.
When is the last time you've ever antagonized?
I don't. I hope never. I don't. If you don't remember, I don't.
Good.
I just bought. In fact, it got funded on Indiegogo. These new knives. It's a new metal technology called V-Matter that is it's metal, but it's like selenium and titanium merged together to form a glass-like surface, and it's very sharp, and it never loses its edge. And we'll see. If you want
to
come over,
you mean you watched an infomercial and you called the 900 number?
No, it was on Indiegogo.
Oh, you did.
That
you
makes
so
it
did.
Real.
Are you slicing a tomato and cutting a can in half? I've seen that before too.
You know, Indiegogo is a new shopping channel. That's what it is.
I think both Kickstarter and Indiegogo do have a little bit of those elements in them, don't they?
It takes a lot longer than 4 to 6 weeks to get your product, though, in most cases. At least that's been my experience.
I bought stuff on Kickstarter I never got. I still am waiting for...
So true. So true, Tim.
See, but that's the thing. You didn't buy them.
Right. That's the problem.
You contributed. Yeah.
Right.
You think you
crossed
bought
your
them.
Fingers and sent money off into the ether.
So I got my knives because they got funded at $100,000, and I'm getting these knives...
Yeah. Yeah,
there is an element of infomercial / shopping channel.
Well, when you're selling knives, it's a little different than selling a space telescope, which I've also donated to.
Yeah, the ARKYD that as well.
ARKYD, yeah, ARKYD. That was a success. That got
yes, it was.
Yeah, look it. They last. They never lose their edge. They're corrosion free, virtually no wear. They're 2.5 times stronger. And they have a video where they bounce a ball bearing on it, and it bounces forever. So that, you're right, it's totally an infomercial.
That sold you, Leo.
It's totally an infomercial. Yeah.
Where's the tomato?
Oh, look, here's an ad. To investors who want to retire comfortably. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to have one final segment as we continue. Great show. Thank you guys, for being here. Really love it. Miriam Jouare from Pebble Watch, getpebble.com. Tim Stevens of Engadget. And not Patrick Beja. Did I say CNET? I mean, did I say Engadget? I mean, CNET. Who's that Engadget? I don't even know who they are. What do they do anymore?
I don't know.
Do you guys, what happened? Did I miss something, or did The Verge all of a sudden verge off into like culture?
You didn't miss
lifestyle.
Anything.
Was that always the plan?
I'm told it was always a plan for sure. I mean, they certainly launched with a very strong tech angle, but ultimately, I think that's what that was their expertise coming off of Engadget for the most part. But yeah, they're ultimately trying to be the culture of now, I think, is the phrase.
You've got culture in my peanut butter. I just want gadget reviews. Now there's an article on dead meat, how to raise livestock in a post antibiotic era, and origami turns creepy in artist's paper mask portraits. What? This is not gadget reporting.
That
well,
scares
you know, it's
me a
like
lot
wired.
Because it seems like it might be going the route of Mashable more than Wired, which has very little to do about tech with tech now. So I love The Verge, but
tell me that we're not in the wrong field. That tech is still going to be around. People want tech information and news. I am not going to start doing a lifestyle channel. I'm not comfortable with that. Is that? I hope we're not in the wrong market.
Well, are we
obsolete?
Knives.
No, but that's just me because I'm discursive. That's not.
it depends how big you want your audience to be, Leo. That's the thing. There's definitely an audience for tech only reporting, but obviously The Verge and Mashable before them wants to grow their business a little bit bigger. And
that's what went wrong at Tech TV, in my opinion. is they said it's not enough just to do geeky stuff and do stuff for tech enthusiasts. So we're going to do anime. We're going to do Thunderbird. Yeah, they did all this other crap trying to get a broader audience. And at that point, they appealed to no one. It was
That's when I stopped watching because it seemed like, you know, if you had shows that were culture and you had shows that were tech and that were complimentary, that'd be one thing. But it seemed like the culture stuff bled into the tech shows. And at that point, I stopped being interested because it all seemed very pandery and very, you know, lots of scantily clad girls dancing around and things like that. Which
for me
really
to interview Kenny Rogers about what's on his iPod, to me, which we had to do, was not my choice. It was
to do both without alienating that core tech audience is a very difficult thing. And I think if there's some negative feedback, and we're hearing some of that now about The Verge, is that people don't, you know, it's hard to draw the line between those two things and to draw people in, especially when so much of your content is tech focused.
Right.
If you're then mixing in some kind of non sequitur stuff as well, it doesn't really fly. But ultimately, you know, the tech news scene is getting more challenging because these companies can distribute their own news as effectively as any of us can. So, you know, if your bread and butter is covering tech news, that's going to become a bit of a challenge. So it becomes more of a, how much value can you add to that news? How much perspective can you add to that news? And how much opinion can you add to that news? And I think that's ultimately what we're kind of doing now. We're talking about not just what happened, but what we think about it. So, you know, in that regard, I hope that we're safe.
I hope that I'm never doing 8 cute and quirky baby announcements on Instagram. Oh, wait a minute. I just did. Oh, they're so cute.
I got to see every one of those pictures. Come on.
And then they do the thing that really bugs me. I hope CNET doesn't do that, where they do a slideshow so they get more views, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to watch. Yeah. You have to go one by one, and each one's got its own little ad. It's just very frustrating. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
But you know, no one goes to Mashable for tech news anymore. 3 years ago, they were one of the big sources, right? But nowadays, Mashable has become something different, and that's great for them. It's a good business, but it's just it becomes something different, and you know someone else took their place. And if The Verge diverges into something different as well, I'm sure someone else will come and take their place because there is a demand for tech news and tech only websites, and there are you know lots that are very good still, but. Including in podcasting, there is a demand for people who talk about tech only all the time and who do a 2-hour show on one week's news.
Right.
It's true. I wonder if there is potentially a way to kind of go into both directions, you know, more vertically, more acutely tech, like more Ars Technica, more non-tech at the same time as going more lifestyle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like Ars Technica. I don't want to do lifestyle. I don't know. Mashable just hired a former executive editor and chief content officer, former managing editor at the New York Times to run their content, Jim Roberts. I don't know if that means they're more mainstream or not, but that's certainly a big hire.
Getting more serious anyway, it seems.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by, speaking of serious, Carbonite.com. If you're not backing up, that's serious. If you're a small business and you're trusting Joe in accounting to back up your servers, you're really in trouble because Joe forgets one day, and then the next day you get the crypto locker and you're dead. You know, imagine what a small business, if it lost all its data, it would be out of business. Who are your accounts receivable? Who are your suppliers? Who owes you? How do you stay in business? I don't care what your business is. Carbonite Online Backup for small business, for individuals, is the easiest way to go. It's one flat rate per year. It's as low as $5 a month per computer, $59.99 a year for a single Mac or a PC. You back up your data automatically, continuously to the cloud using encryption. You can further encrypt it for total privacy. If you, you know, anytime you need your data, you log on to your Carbonite account on any computer, there's your stuff, or use their smartphone apps. They're free. It really is a good solution. You can even email files from your cloud using their smartphone or tablet apps. Carbonite.com will back up your data automatically, continuously, and they'll do it for free for the next 2 weeks when you use our offer code TWIT. You don't need to use a credit card. 2 weeks is usually enough for that first backup set. And then from then on, you're just, you know, kind of keeping up, which is great. You'll get 2 free months when you buy if you use our offer code TWIT. So go to Carbonite.com, offer code TWIT. Don't get bit by Crypto Locker and these other, or fire, flood, and tsunami. There's lots of dangers out there.
That Crypto Locker thing is giving me nightmares.
Now, so in France, is it happening there?
No, not. I mean, no one's really talking about it yet. See, that's what I mean. I heard about it on the Twit network,
right?
And that's a piece of news I didn't really get anywhere else, save those kinds of specialized publications.
Steve Gibson talked about it on Security Now. This is a virus that's going around that, you know, there's lots of ransomware out there, but most of the time you can get around it, use malware bytes or something and uninstall it. This one actually uses strong encryption to encrypt your data. And once it's encrypted, I mean, it's strong encryption. Nobody can get it. They say you have 72 hours to give us $300 for the private key. They store that key on a unique server. They even give you a countdown timer as you watch your data disappearing. And if you don't pay in the 72 hours, they literally delete the key and that's it. No one can get your data, not even the NSA. Can get your data back. They're using RSA 2048. I mean, it's strong encryption. Very scary. Yep. Very scary. Real quickly, a couple of final. Maybe I'll ask Steve on this. This new air gap BIOS virus. Have you followed this? There's a security researcher who's found a virus, Mac or PC, that can survive formatting the drive. His name is Dragos Rui. Anybody who's named Dragos and is a security researcher, I think we're going to listen to him. He sounds like a Bond villain. Dragos.
It's another one of those nightmare things. The guy was apparently, he noticed some strange behavior on his PC and he couldn't find out where it came from. There was some weird activity on the network, and he kept reformatting his machine and it kept coming back. He didn't understand how it was going, how it was coming back. It was obviously a virus that rewrote the BIOS. And in the end, I think he managed to, by isolating the computer completely, he managed to identify the transmission method, which was partly, sorry, I'm not 100% sure on this, but it's partly the USB drive, which is pretty common from what I understand, so I'm not sure what the big deal is there. But there's also communication through the sound system,
basically. Yeah, this is where it goes right off the rails.
And he's going to explain this a week from now at a security conference. So maybe there's going to be a little bit more information on it then.
This is not some, by the way, Dragos is not some weird guy out of nowhere. He organized CanSec West. He organized PAC West. He does the Pwn to Own competition every year. He is absolutely a legitimate security researcher. He thinks the malware has the ability to use high-frequency transmissions passed between computer speakers and microphones to jump air gaps. Air gaps means your computer is not connected to the network. It's standalone. He's had computers infected with brand-new everything, brand-new BIOS, brand-new operating system, and they still get infected even though they're not connected to anything. And here's the scary thing. It's not just PCs. It's not just BIOS. It's also UEFI. The extensible firmware interface is used on Macintoshes as well, newer Windows machines. Boy, we'll find out. That's one to watch. When is he revealing it?
Next week, I believe. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not.
Very interesting to hear about this.
Kind of crazy, right?
Creepy, huh? Yeah.
It goes into the realm of it sounds fishy. So we'll see.
Yeah.
A lot of people think it's very serious. The founder of DEF CON and Black Hat tweeted, "No joke, it's really serious."
Yeah.
Everybody thinks that Dragos is very reliable. He's not, you know, he's not hysterical.
Sure. If anyone else, you know, if someone that wasn't reliable would have started talking about something like this, he would have been. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
the thing is, it's my guess is it's state sponsored. No, seriously. It's not the kind of thing, you know, somebody who wants to hijack your machine for $300 is going to do. There's plenty of low hanging fruit. You don't need to write software to send signals through the audio channels. But if you're state sponsored and you know that Iran's nuclear enrichment program is air-gapped. We remember Stuxnet did use USB keys.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, but what do you do with the you know, speaker to microphone thing? Do you go get out the plant and get a ghetto blaster to sound, you know?
Maybe.
Call John Cusack on that plant.
Maybe. Yeah, right. Very interesting. Mm. All right. I think we can wrap this up. It's late enough. You've worked hard enough. Hey, Patrick Bejat, it's the middle of the night.
One last question, maybe. How much would you pay for a movie to get it the day it comes out on theater on your home TV?
Our local cable company, Comcast, is doing that on their on-demand. And it's often $10 to $20 to see same day as released in theaters. Here's my problem with it. The perception is that it's a crappy movie or they wouldn't be doing that.
Mm. Yeah.
The day somebody does it with the, you know, the next big movie, maybe.
Well, that's what Netflix wants to do.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
how much? How much are they asking?
Yeah, they're just talking about it now. As what is the theory?
So we're all going to go to see an Ender's Game after this. I got a date to see Ender's Game. The tickets are $9 each, $9.50 each.
Yeah.
So there's going to be five or six of us. So that's $54. If we could get it for $30 and all sit around the TV and watch it, that's cheaper, right?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have the popcorn, Leo, and that's definitely an important part of the experience. You have popcorn, yes, but not the same popcorn. You can detract some of the value.
Different experience. I mean, come on. It's going to be better at the theater.
The home ODB in the chat room says the home popcorn market has not kept up. Popcorn technology. I don't know. You get an Orville Redenbacher. See, my daughter does not know how to cook popcorn. She's 21. And I said, we have Orville Redenbacher. I have a pot. I have oil. She said, "What? Don't you have where's the packet that you put in the microwave?" Mm. Said, that's not popcorn. That's horrible.
Of course it is.
No, it's horrible. Wait a minute. That's not microwave popcorn? No, don't tell me you think that. You're French. You're from the land of foie gras, and you're eating microwave popcorn?
Okay, Leo, wait a second. If we want to start talking about food, we're not going to be talking about popcorn.
Oh, no. We could be.
It's a lifestyle blog now.
Oh, you're right. Instead, I could be showing. Charbax brought me. Look at this. That's my Galaxy S4, right? That's an S3. Here's a Galaxy Note 3. Here's an iPhone 5S with a fingerprint reader. It's in gold, too, which is nice. And here is a Lumia 9. Actually, this is the 1020. It's got the little hump with a good camera. So that's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 phones. Total cost, $200 out the door. These are all Chinese knockoffs. And here's the amazing thing. This looks like an iPhone with iOS 7 and everything. That's Android running on it. Charbax website is, what's it again? armdevices.net. Look at that, is Android. That is not iOS 7. These are very popular in China. This is not Windows Phone. This is not your Nokia. This is Android. Isn't that, it even has the Windows logo on the bottom. And the tiles turn.
Shenanigans.
I call shenanigans. That's amazing.
$43.99.
That's how much is that?
I don't know.
$36 for this.
There you go.
$36.
Can you slice a tomato with it?
Oh, that was good.
And on that note, I want to thank you so much, Tim Stevens, and gadget editor. Can't wait to see the car stuff. And I love it that you're doing feature stuff. That's really a great thing for you to be doing.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I have a new weekly tech
CNET. I'm sorry, CNET. I tried really hard to say it right this time. CNET. Go ahead.
Thanks very much.
What do you got? Something new? Something new at CNET?
Yeah, I have a new column that's going to be launching this week, kind of a weekly roundup in tech news with perspective. And I'm actually trying to get some ideas for names for the thing. So if anybody in chat or if anybody on Twitter has some suggestions for what I should call the thing, I would love to hear your ideas.
I think Can You Slice a Tomato with That is pretty darn good.
Not a bad start. Yes.
But watch out, Tim. They're going to accuse you to have a lifestyle blog now.
No. I don't think that'll be a problem.
Never. Never!
Tomatoes.
Never! Patrick Beja, patrickbeja.com, BEJA.com. His new show is in French, so forget it.
Nice, Leo.
Only Miriam could understand it.
That's okay. I'll tune in.
No, it's at patrickbeja.com.
Well, you know what? I've spoken way too much already during this show. So just follow me at NotPatrick on Twitter and you'll have
everything. You'll see it all. He tweets all the time. Jab, 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 hook.
Exactly. I send cheeseburgers and pies and, you know, and then I ask you if you've listened to my free podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Miriam Juare, love having you on in your kitchen. Look at this beautiful kitchen. Are you a cook?
So it's... No, I'm not, but my spouse is a bit of a foodie. You know what? It's Juare, but it's okay. I'll forgive you this time.
I keep saying Juare because I think it's so French to say Juare.
I know, but it's not. But you know what?
Why don't you make it Juare? It's in your power.
I suppose I could add an accent.
Accent aigu.
Say Joyer. I think that's the American way to say it. Joyer.
So how am I supposed to say Juare?
Juare.
I'm sorry. Miriam Juare.
It's okay. Don't worry.
You know my real name is Leo with an accent aigu on the E?
I know. It's Leo Laporte.
Leo Laporte.
Is it? You have like an actual French name with an accent.
I do.
That's right. Wow.
And I don't know if I should say this, but when I came to San Francisco radio, because, you know, in radio, you're not supposed to use a real name. And my program director said, no, you can't use Leo Laporte. It sounds gay.
That's terrible.
I know. Boy, was he wrong, by the way. That would have been the best career move of all time.
Exactly.
So I changed it to Leo Laporte, and now I'm stuck with it 30 years later. Thank you, everybody.
He was trying to say it sounds French.
He meant French. Yeah. Sounds like Pepe Le Pew. No, for a while, I called myself. This is embarrassing. I call myself Leo Laporte, the DJ Francais. I hate to admit it. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Amazing.
Another twit is in the can. I don't have the heart to promote it.
Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby.